And welcome to TYH, a podcast dedicated to youth issues on TRS Radio. And my name is Anglo, and with me I have Nikkei.
Happy birthday, Adolf Hitler.
It's 420, guys.
420, blaze it at Auschwitz, rev up those ovens.
So what I recommend doing today is throw away your pot and worship Hitler.
throw away your pot and pick up a podcast.
Yeah. Don't actually worship Hitler. Worship Jesus, by the way.
Jesus loves Hitler. Jesus loves everyone.
Yeah, it's true.
Including Hitler, and especially Hitler.
Yeah. So I want to say it's officially Big Nigga season because I was at school and I saw a guy who looked like the Big Nigga meme.
Oh, yeah?
He's
come out of hibernation?
Yeah, I think it's time.
All right. That's my favorite time of the year. 420 is the start of Big Nigga season.
What's all that munchies? Or isn't Lent closing soon?
It is.
So, like, everyone's going to start getting fat because they're not fasting anymore?
Lent is a time of fasting and discipline.
Asceticism.
Yes, deep asceticism. And I always try to incorporate lifting with my asceticism.
And
because
asceticism.
I believe, you know, well, in well, a way, yes.
Get those gains.
Just as Christ lifted the cross beam to his own death, we must lift iron weights unto death.
Unto death.
So.
Well, before we celebrate.
Big nigga season, getting swole.
Well, it's officially Hitler's birthday. Are you going to do anything special?
I did do something special. Like, I went out.
Sacrifice to Vishnu or something?
I went out and started picking up trash National Park, well, State Park, because there was a lot of it, and it's been sitting there for too damn long, and so I got fed up with it and said, you know what, today's the anniversary of the Führer's birth, I'm going to go and do a good deed.
Yeah.
And
well, it's
hauled
sad.
Out 40 pounds of garbage.
I have a few, like, natural wonders kind of around my house. And it's just sad, you know, a lot of people go there to jog and, you know, hike, but it's just sad how people disrespect the environment. And they just like throw papers and wrappers and bottles all over. It's like beautiful environment. And it just makes me so angry. I get so mad every time it's like beautiful, but I see like these water bottles all over the place. I'm like, come on, don't do this.
Yeah. Like, just take it with you, please.
Yeah. I just can't imagine the mindset of doing that.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just gotta sit back and like in shock at the sheer audacity of some people.
Didn't you know that environmentalism is gay though?
Yes. I actually did know that. Doesn't mean that conservation is gay.
So you're gay. No, even that's gay. I want to be able to just ride my truck everywhere, all over everything.
I'm a conservationist. Blood and soil.
Well, that's fascist.
Good.
In America,
I'm doing it right.
In America, we could tear down all the trees and put shopping malls.
Put up a parking lot, as they say.
Yeah, and that's freedom. Yep. Freedom to destroy nature.
That's happiness.
That's true happiness. You
know, that's capitalist happiness.
Yeah, replace a beautiful, like, I don't know, valley with a bunch of Walmarts and refugees.
You know, funny you should mention that. A certain Slovenian intellectual was making that point last night in a live stream debate that I was watching.
Oh, who was this man that I was debating?
That was a debate between Slavoj Žižek and Jordan Peterson. And the topic of the debate was happiness, capitalism versus Marxism. And as you might imagine, old Peterson was taking up the side of capitalism while Zizek was defending Marxism. It played out how you would imagine such a thing would go. Jordan Peterson absolutely got blown the fuck out by based commie Slavoj.
Yeah, well, I know that Slavoj.
Your boy Slavoj.
He has a picture of Stalin in his room. He does. Like, there is an interview with Vice, you know. So maybe he is more based than we let on, than we think.
Stalin. Based. But no, he was making like the great anti-liberalism points that he's not wrong, and we agree with. One of the things that he was attacking was climate catastrophism. He's skeptical and critical of the catastrophist projections about climate change. And one thing he brought up that said absolutely horrified him was this idea that we're gonna put these like aerosolated some sort of compound into the atmosphere to block out the sun and prevent warming. Wait a second. So it's not a greenhouse gas, but because it's like a solid, it's going to literally let the reflect the light back into space, preventing it from reaching the Earth. And this is a good idea, supposedly.
Mm.
Yeah, nah. Let's not do that.
Sounds gay, mate.
And he's, he made the point that it doesn't mean the Earth isn't being polluted and that we shouldn't just ignore how we treat the planet, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's like, the big dollar science institutions are going to produce a sane answer.
Well, even like a Marxist critique could be, and I've heard this from some orthodox Marxists, I guess you could call them, is that it takes away focus from working class issues, and it's like becomes this bourgeois thing. And now like communist parties are not talking about, helping the working class and organizing the working class. They're talking about like organic foods and, and greenhouse gases and and even leftists maybe will even go and compliment companies because they like have a green policy or something. And it's like, you're missing, right. you're like totally missed. The problem here is capitalism.
Zizek would say pure ideology. Their conversation yielded some other, Vugin-based quotes.
Wouldn't you say that Peterson just basically, because the topic was happiness, but he didn't talk about happiness?
Well,
or like
he was the first one to speak. And the way that they had it set up was the each person would have a 30-minute intro monologue.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, they went into some 15-minute back and forths, and then they did Q&A, and they ended up only getting to two questions. The first question, they spent like the most of the end of the show discussing, and then like the second question, they only were able to give like a minute response to, and the last question they asked was like, "What do you hope people get out of this debate?"
Oh my gosh, someone asked that.
Yeah, that was like the closer.
Well, I hope they get out what we said.
It was so cringe. And, Peterson was like, "Oh, I hope that people see here the power and importance of dialogue, that people can come together with different ideas, and that it's okay to disagree, because we can have a discussion that's civil, and this is avoiding violence." And, then they gave, Zizek his minute to give his answer, and it was basically the same thing. It's like, he also made a point to end on, like,
"Go.
All the leftists in the audience, stop being a fag."
Is that what he said?
Essentially.
Yeah. Well, he does that thing where
don't enforce PC, essentially.
Well, Zizek likes to critique PC culture, and he also likes to troll leftists, because when I was a leftist, I realized this too, which is one reason why I left the leftist movement. I was never like active organizer. I was too young, but I was an ideological. Yeah. I just noticed that it became this like bourgeois, just like mind game. It's just like a little thing people do for fun and just think about. It's not, they've kind of, went against their own principles, and it's become this like gender identity, bourgeois, like homosexuality, idiot stuff. And I think he likes to troll leftists for the fact that they've really have ignored and even debased their principles.
Right.
It's just,
you know, he explicitly name drop calling out the LGBTQ, I guess, fag police.
Yeah, it's like, even just from, just think about it. What does, and like, it, I think on the oppression stack in the modern leftist's mind, or at least the Western leftist's mind, is like an upper middle class lesbian non-binary Jew is more oppressed than like a working class white guy who like works in the coal mines, or maybe like a even a Mexican laborer, you know,
like, yeah, like can only afford like a trailer park
home. Yeah, like it's like, oh no, we're actually more oppressed than you, you know.
And us. He has to like worry about his kids getting hooked on drugs.
Well, all you have to worry about is like, are you gonna kill yourself or no? Is he trans? Suicide?
This stuff, it's all bullshit, and it's, he's like the only one willing to say that, because like he's the only one who's not in it for profit.
Yeah, well, Zizek also, he's more established, as like, right? So he could say things that other people can't.
Yeah, he's got tenure as well as skin in the game.
Yeah, yeah, and so he could say things, and since he says it in like the in a very, you know, Hegelian inspired way and very big brained way, people are like, oh, okay, and they'll still go along with it even though they disagree.
I think it. I'm not gonna lie. I think it also helps that he has this very alien accent.
Yeah, it does.
Like,
and he's from like an Eastern Bloc country too, so it's like
it's harder to tell somebody, you know, if to be indignant and like tell them to fuck off if they're like clearly intelligent and know what they're talking about, but like just because of the language barrier.
Yeah.
Sometimes their English is not perfect,
mm-hmm.
and it sounds like an like you would. If you were uneducated, you'd have this poor grammar, but he's clearly not uneducated. He just doesn't
speak. It's not his native tongue.
Perfect in English. Yeah, it's not his native tongue. And so it's harder to like tell this older guy who's like well-respected, you know, if you're some Paz Patrol liberal, you can't tell this guy to fuck off because he's going to lecture you and maybe you don't quite understand what he's saying.
Yeah, well, I think leftists like obscurity. I think he plays with that sometimes, so he could like get away with things if he says things in a slightly obscure way, you know.
Yeah, it's harder to like criticize it if you're just like struggling to understand literally what he's saying.
Yeah. But if you're woke, you know what he's saying.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I think other people have talked about this. Well, like white leftists or any like traditional leftists, maybe, or anti-Zionist leftists, they're just going to be considered fascists in a few decades. Because I mean, people even some leftists even call Zizek a fascist sometimes.
Oh yeah, somebody was.
It's like, oh, you actually put it. You focus on working class issues over like bourgeois homosexuality, you know, and like. Right. Decadent.
Look, if Zizek is a fascist, I'm happy to take him.
Yeah.
I'm happy to let him on the team. You know, we will we'll purge the rest of them. Don't you worry, Slavoj.
Yeah, the left is in dire straits, because I even see like tankies sometimes.
More like in dire gaze.
Even tankies, like people always talk about tankies are based, and I could see that maybe. But even in tanky Twitter, I see people with like, they put their pronouns and like LGBTQ tanky. I'm like, oh gosh. I think they're just,
yeah.
The left is just so, I don't know.
Bro, like, I'm not even, I think I've explained this in like a prior episode, but the, one of the biggest appeals about Stalinism to me when I was younger.
They didn't like fags.
Was that they hate fags. It's like, oh, what a coincidence. I hate fags too.
Well, sometimes you'll find people who are like LGBT Stalinists, but they like say, oh, it's like a misrepresentation or he was forced to do that, you know, and like it's total like, wow, revisionism, totally changing.
That sucks. I wish that did happen. Spoiler alert, it did.
It did.
And it was a good thing.
Yeah, well, because like the Russian Revolution.
Not a good thing.
No, not at all. It's like one of the most tragic things that's ever happened in,
yeah,
in like the past 100 or so years. But the thing is that like the principles that it started on couldn't maintain a society for law.
Right.
So Stalin had to come around and kind of become the strong man and implement Puritanism to an extent, you know? And
yeah, the new economic policy that Lenin tried, you know, and himself regretted. It was a chaotic situation with, you know, the purity of the, or maybe coherence of the ideological underpinnings of some of these policies were dubious.
Mm-hmm. Well, they did have like free love and stuff. initially after the Russian Revolution.
I don't know, man. I wasn't there.
I know, but they did. That's what I've heard. But after Stalin, that stuff was just kind of like not.
Like, when people say they had free love, like, who was really engaging in this?
Probably the upper echelons of the society.
Was some peasant, you know,
No.
Serf descended revolutionary, is just like the guy who's never been in a classroom. He spent like more time in his field than his church than anywhere else. And, you know, his.
Talking about the upper, like the
sick of his living conditions, you know, because he's like struggling.
Talking about the upper family, the party members, like the high ups.
Yeah,
it was very Jewish.
Yeah, no, I believe that. But that reminds me, I wanted to bring up a non-Jewish member of the Soviet elite,
Leon Trotsky.
Well, I don't want to bring him up, but I did like how they put him down.
Yeah.
Yeah, Trotsky got yeeted on.
In
Mexico, of all places. Couldn't hide.
You chose Mexico. Why did you choose Mexico, dude? Well, it's good. At least he wasn't here. Didn't he used to live in New York City or something? I don't know.
I've heard somebody say that.
I don't know if it's true.
He was in New York. I've never read that myself, but that said, it's been like
mentioned.
Years since I've cared to read about Leon Trotsky.
Yeah, he's got an ice pick in his head. That's all I need to know.
Yeah, like I thought he was interesting for like 5 minutes and then moved on. No, but the person I wanted to talk about is not Jewish, unlike Leon Trotsky, who's very Jewish. His name is Lavrenty Beria, and he was one of the leaders of the NKVD. He was the head of the NKVD, you know, in Stalin's time.
National Klan Visionary Division. National Klan Vision.
Violent Division.
National Klan Violent Division.
National Klan of Violence and Destruction. Of Violent Death. Like, reading about his life, he is a archetype of somebody who, like, rides to the top of clown world. He is the hardcore clown pilled nigga from the Soviet Union. One of the original clown pilled guys who is just like going to take everything he can out of, you know, in hedonistic fashion from this bizarre
system.
Planet he finds himself living on.
Clown system.
I think
system of a clown.
Yes. Oh my god. Wake up, sheeple.
Like a honk.
Hockey doesn't put on clown makeup. This guy, he came from pious Georgian Orthodox. I consider this guy to be something of a rape god.
What?
He was like known to the Soviet circles as like the rape guy.
Ew.
He was the village rapist. He was extremely sexually predatory, and like people did not want to have their wives or daughters around when he was there, because like he just would like rape women and not give a fuck. That was his thing. He was a rape god, and he was hardcore. Like, this guy was the leader of the NKVD, which is like manipulation textbook case.
Mm-hmm.
This guy was a sniveling coward and sycophant. I read that as Stalin was dying, you know, on his deathbed, he was passing in and out of consciousness, and like there was a point at which everyone thought he was dead, and like, you know, Beria was just laughing and, you know, cursing him and spitting on him and slapping his face, and then like he actually woke into consciousness again, and then the guy Beria falls to his knees and starts kissing his hand as he's, you know, as he regains consciousness, because he's that much of a brown nosing, you know, bastard, that here's this guy who he actually hates, but he's just going to be goody two shoes when he's actually wakes up from consciousness. Then, you know, Stalin passes out again and he goes right back to shitting all over him. So this is the kind of person who truly imbibes clown world. This is like, if you actually take the clown pill to its serious logical conclusion, this is who you get. This is who you become. Because I think at the center of what people call the clown pill is hedonism. And I'm not talking about like laughing off the, you know, what we can't change for now, you know, having a sense of stoicism to the struggles of daily life and life in society. I think that's an appropriate response. But people who want to, who like hear the phrase ride the tiger and, you know, take that to mean be as degenerate and as, you know, pleasure seeking as you can in this shitty society as a way of life. And I think that this guy was an example of that. And it's the exact opposite of living a life of honor. It's a life of dishonor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, disdain for, you know, being a good person, because I think it rests upon an assumption that being a good person is being a sucker.
Hmm. But it's not.
It's not. It's being a sucker is like, it's having an unquestioned worldview.
Being a sucker.
The unexamined
is...
life.
Yeah.
I think he was actually he was the guy behind the doctor's plot.
What is the doctor's plot? I'm not very well versed in history.
So the doctor's plot, I guess, was, you know, I don't know if it was really true or not, but given that this guy was a scumbag, I wouldn't put it past him for lying. And he was sort of trying to convince Stalin that the Jews were trying to kill him.
Oh.
And that the Jewish doctors were actually poisoning him. Yeah, Jewish people will always try to screw over and pull a fast one on the Goyim whenever possible. They're experts in subversion. But I don't know if this was actually true, because I think Berea was just trying to, you know, manipulate Stalin into not trusting. Yeah, he was a Georgian. And
well, Stalin's a Georgian too, sorry.
They both were Georgians, yes.
From Georgia, they're from Atlanta.
Indeed.
Good old boys. Good old boys controlled the Soviet Union.
Yeah, that's the Man of Steel. You can imagine how if you're the leader of the NKVD, you're going to be, you know, one of the top guys in the Soviet Union, but not the top guy. And everyone else around you that is equal in level to you is probably a Jew. Mm-hmm. So it's in your interest to convince the guy at the top that the Jews are all plotting against you, because that means you're the next guy up for...
Yeah, well, he was dancing on his grave, essentially. He thought he was dead.
Yeah.
This guy seems like a nut.
He was a nut. He's clown-pilled, and, you know...
So clown-pill is like ride the tiger, you say? I didn't really heard that term, clown-pilled.
It's like the wrong take of ride the tiger.
Yeah.
Right. People who think ride the tiger means, like, it's okay to be a degenerate because society...
Yeah.
You know, that's like if a true commitment to the clown pill. There are people out there who, you know, who talk about the clown pill, but they don't really think of its logical conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
This is its logical conclusion, becoming a rape god.
So don't do the clown pill.
Don't. I don't think it's a good choice. I think I think a commitment to self-improvement and you know, having that extend into the lives of those around you is strategy and lifestyle we need to live.
Well, he could be based because he was introduced by Stalin to FDR as our Himmler.
Yes. Well,
wasn't Himmler like the weird pagan retard or something?
I don't know. I'm.
Yep, he was the esoteric guy. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry, pagans. Or
I don't really look into, you know, Nordic paganism too much, because, like, you know, what connection do I have to things? Even if, like, I wasn't Christian and, like, I was in the big gang, like, why would it be to...
You'd be, like,
God,
worshiping,
you know,
Zeus?
The pantheon.
Yeah.
Something, I don't know. Actually, nothing, because they're not real. Those deities don't exist. I wouldn't be worshiping anything.
Demons!
I'd be worshiping an idea.
Yeah.
Hmm. A figure of mythology. And probably demons.
Yes, indeed.
But I think, if I recall correctly, Berea met his end after he was convicted of treason for the...
autoerotic asphyxiation. Isn't it weird, like, when you hear of, like, a famous person, it's like, well, how they die? Autoerotic asphyxiation.
Oh.
It's like, what? Who even thinks about doing that? I guess Jews. Anyways, go on.
So, As we like to do, I'll quote from Wikipedia, describe his trial and death. On June 26th, 1953, Berea was arrested and held in an undisclosed location near Moscow. Accounts of Berea's fall vary considerably. By the most likely account, Khrushchev prepared an elaborate ambush, convening a meeting of the Presidium on the 26th, where he suddenly launched a scathing attack on Berea, accusing him of being a traitor and a spy in the pay of British intelligence.
Mm.
Berea was taken completely by surprise. He asked, "What's going on, Nikita Sergeyevich?
Why are you picking fleas in my trousers?
Huh?
Molotov and others quickly spoke against Berea one after the other, followed by a motion by Khrushchev for his instant dismissal. When Berea finally realized what was happening and plaintively appealed to Malenkov to speak to him, his old friend and crony silently hung his head and refused to meet his gaze. Malenkov pressed a button on his desk as the prearranged signal to Marshal Grigory Zhukov and a group of armed officers in a nearby room who burst in and arrested Berea. Berea was taken first to the Moscow guardhouse and then to the bunker of the headquarters of Moscow Military District. Defense Minister Nikolai Bulganin ordered the Kantemirivskaya Tank Division and the Tamanskaya Motor Rifle Division to move into Moscow to prevent security forces loyal to Berea from rescuing him. Many of Berea's subordinates, protégés, and associates were also arrested. And it lists the others. Pravda did not announce Berea's arrest until the 10th of July, crediting it to Malenkov and referring to Berea's criminal activities against the party and state. Berea and others were tried by a special court presence of the Supreme Court of the Soviet Union on the 23rd of December in 53, with no defense counsel and no right to appeal. Marshal Ivan Konev was the chairman of the court. Berea was found guilty of three things. First, treason. It was alleged that he had maintained a secret connection with foreign intelligence services, and in particular, attempts to initiate peace talks with Hitler in 1941 through the ambassador of the Kingdom of Bulgaria were classified as treason, though Berea had been acting on the orders of Stalin and Molotov. It was also alleged that Berea, who in 1942 helped organize the defense of the North Caucasus, tried to let the Germans occupy the Caucasus. Berea's suggestion to his assistants that to improve foreign relations, it was reasonable to transfer Kaliningrad Oblast to Germany and part of Karelia to Finland, the Moldovan Soviet Socialist Republic to Romania, and the Kuril Islands to Japan, also formed part of the allegations against him. His second count, terrorism, which Berea's participation in the purge of the Red Army in 1941 was classified as an act of terrorism. And third, counter-revolutionary activity during the Russian Civil War. In 1919, Berea worked in the security services of the Azerbaijan Democratic Republic. Berea maintained that he was assigned to that work by the Humet Party, which subsequently merged with the Adalat Party, the Ahar Party, and the Baku Bolsheviks to establish the Azerbaijan Communist Party. Berea and all other defendants were sentenced to death on the 23rd of December, 1953. When the death sentence was carried out, Berea pleaded on his knees for mercy before collapsing to the floor and wailing and crying, but to no avail. The other six defendants were executed by firing squad on the same day the trial ended. Berea was executed separately. He was shot through the forehead by General Pavel Batitsky, who had to stuff a rag into Berea's mouth to silence him. His final moments bore great similarity to those of his own predecessor, NKVD Chief Nikolai Yezhov, who begged for his life before his execution in 1940. His body was subsequently cremated and his remains buried in the forest near Moscow.
Huh.
He died as he lived, sniveling, begging, manipulating.
He took the clown pill.
He took the clown pill and rode that bitch to the very end.
His little clown bike, honking his little horn.
Yeah.
Speaking of clown world, I was overlooking, someone was talking about a paper that they were going to write at school, and I was kind of interested. You know why I was interested? Because she's talking about how she's going to write a paper on oral sex.
What?
So that's what thoughts be doing at school now. They be writing papers about oral sex.
The thoughts of thoughts.
Yeah, it's like, when you send your daughters to school, this is what they're going to do. Sorry, but they're going to that's the only thing they know how to do, and so they're going to write about it.
Damn.
A lot of these gross college thoughts. I just couldn't believe it. It's like, what? Maybe it's like one of those sex classes, you think? You know,
so
like,
what's thesis? Do you know?
I didn't know.
It's probably better that, you know, you didn't press for details there.
The thesis is, just like, can you get oral cancer from oral sex?
The answer may surprise you.
It was just weird. I don't know if she meant cunnilingus, like for males or females. I don't know which one, but maybe she's talking about it in general. I don't know why she had to write a paper on that. Like, we are living in clown world.
I don't think I've ever written a paper that's referenced oral sex.
I haven't written a paper that's referenced sex.
That might be true as well, but I feel like that might be more likely. I can't think of anything in specific, so probably not.
Yeah, I mean, what are a few incels like us going to write about? We don't know anything.
You, incel.
sometimes I go on the incel subreddit because mm-hmm. it's funny. But like the people who usually use the insult incel are either sluts or virgins, virgin males who say, hey, I'm a virgin, but at least I'm not an incel. It's like, what? Aren't you an incel?
Dude, one of these days when we win, we're going in with a secret police and initiating Operation Co-Incel Pro. Hmm. And we're going to liquidate the perverts.
The perverts?
The perverts, yes.
Like this guy we just talked about?
Yes. There will be no Bereas in our state. Inshallah. That's good.
Inshallah.
No, there will be no rape gods.
I don't know that
there
term.
There is no way we can...
Is that your own...
It's just what I thought of him. You know, like, wow. This guy does not give a fuck. He's willing to, like, take advantage of anybody weaker than him and manipulate anyone who's stronger
than him.
That's
my least favorite Eminem song. Rape God.
What? I think it's a different title there. I think it's Rap God.
Oh, okay.
Rap God. Yes, no E at the end.
Rape Seed God.
Yes. No, I don't say that to dignify him. It's just more like you have to, at some point, you have to accept that some people just do not give a fuck. They will take anything if they can. They will abuse anybody who is weaker than them for their own pleasure. And they feel no remorse, and they feel no inhibition.
He's a psychopath.
It's total psycho or sociopathic behavior. This is like this is the most antisocial sociopathy you can experience. And he found himself in such a extremely powerful leading role in the Soviet Union. And I mean, you have to credit that he got what he wanted, because he got everything that he wanted. You know, the only thing he only stopped getting what he wanted the moment he died.
Mm-hmm.
I can promise you, if he had kept on living past that, he would have gotten more. And you know, this is evil. This is the epitome of sin. But that's what it looks like. It looks like this dishonorable ghoul, and it's no way to live.
Mm. Is there anything else about Clown World that's been going on recently? I'm thinking about that new song.
It still exists.
There's that Lil Nas X song. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
There is this rapper who made like a country song, and they took it off the Billboard charts because it didn't...
Yes. Now I know what you're talking about.
And it sounds like complete horrendous. I mean, modern country sucks anyways, but you know, I couldn't tell a difference, to be honest.
You know, it's just Billy Ray Cyrus did a feature on it.
Yeah, and like he was like, man, nigga, why'd they do this? Man, maybe I could get Billy Ray Cyrus on this track. Can y'all help me? And then Billy Ray Cyrus.
Billy Ray.
Then Billy
drop
Ray
a verse for a nigga.
And then Billy Ray dropped a few verses on a remix. And it just sucks so bad. Like, country music is so bad, and it's so sad. Like, this is what people in rural areas are being fed to. It's this horrendous crap.
I've seen the Black Twitter's reaction to this. And, you know, one of the most bizarre takes that I witnessed was that black people invented country.
Oh, yeah, of course.
We was country music. And the white man took it from us. And so, like, this song is actually a return to the roots for black music.
It does make me laugh, though, because he has, like, his totally exaggerated, like, southern accent when he's singing. I got the horses in the bag. No, the rap guy. The rap god. He's probably
the rapist.
Yeah, he's a rapist.
He's a convicted rapist.
Yeah, and...
One who raps. Mm. Who commits acts of rap. The only people you see listening to that are like wannabes.
Yeah, it's true.
Who are like suburban wiggers.
Yeah, dude, I hate wiggers so much.
Like these people will they'll wear the fox shirt. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Gosh, I you know one thing about the term.
Their style is like all fox and Volcom, and you know they'll
Volcom.
And they'll pay to like have their truck tricked out.
Oh gosh. Yeah, I hate
it's all consumerist. Like,
yeah, yeah.
They do it as like their bigger version of Pimp My Ride.
It gets me mad though, like the term wignet. I know we've talked about it a few times, but it's like I hate wiggers, but I don't think people with bad optics are wiggers. That's like such a misrepresentation.
Yeah, no, like a wigger.
You know a wigger when you see
like,
one.
Yes,
that is true.
Yeah, it's like these guys aren't Uyghurs. You guys are what? You're not, you like?
You just don't like how they present.
It's like even going like as so far to even maybe call someone like Richard Spencer a Wignet. It's like, huh?
That's why the term it has no meaning.
Yeah, it's like what you're calling
a Wignet is somebody on my side who I don't like.
Yeah. Richard Spencer is like, or people like that are the complete opposite of Uyghurs. Like not even close. I don't know. It's like, it's a weird term. Cause like, I don't like Uyghurs. No one likes them.
No.
They're pieces of shit and they usually do drugs and all that and they're bad. And
yeah, no. Like, Uyghurs are addicted to drugs. They like to sell their friends drugs. They, you know, aren't productive. They don't like, you know, working hard and having like a family. They're just, I don't know what you can say about them. It's just, They're not what you should want to be, and you should avoid ending up like that because that's like the Jewish trap.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations, you're like everything a Jew wants you to be.
Mm.
You're
sag your pants like a.
Not only are you a consumerist, but you're also like you don't like conform to the. It's like contrast it with hipsters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like bona fide hipsters are like consumerists, but they're not exactly what Jews want white people to be because they sort of will carry themselves in an ironic, dignified way.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the Uyghur is like the consumerist and fully undignified white person.
Yeah, it's sad.
There's no spiritual value to that kind of lifestyle.
Oh, it's the worst.
It's
just Americanism. Like America,
it's a LARP of ruralite living.
It's the biggest LARP because there's like no.
It's corrupted by urbanism. And it's ruralism trying to be urbanism, which it should never want to be.
Yeah.
It's like ruralism is good because it isn't urban.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, I don't know, we live in such an oppressive system, this capitalist system, like that our culture has been degenerated to something like this, Uyghurdom, you know, in some areas. Like this is all we do with our lives now is smoke weed and play video games or while listening to ICP or something like that. This is sad.
Yeah.
There's nothing organic in America anymore. There are in some places, don't get me wrong, but it's like what we're doing is we're erasing these organic areas of culture, these pockets of culture, and we're just replacing it with this ugliness. It's unrefined, as you said. It's just not good for anyone. You know, places like in rural areas, they used to go to church and like wear their Sunday best, but now they're like in some areas where the Jews brought in the opioids. Now they're like listening to ICP and not going to church, and they're like looking like retards, with baggy pants.
Right. They like will do the unironic nigga attitude.
Yeah. Exactly. It's.
You know, we are notorious on this show for parody of how niggas act.
Yeah, it's funny.
It's funny.
But it's
like,
ironic.
It's not funny if you actually like live like that. If you like, you know, you're the kind of person to like refer to women as bitches, you know, out of just
my hoes.
Yeah, like, you know, thinking of I don't know, it's not there's a right way to like, you know, express masculinity. And this ain't it.
Yeah, it's like this weird, gross form of masculinity. It doesn't make any sense.
It's because matchup. White people trying and failing to emulate Negro.
And we're not Negroes.
And we're not. So, first of all, it's like not going to work for that reason. But second of all, you shouldn't want it to work because nobody should want to live like a nigger.
Yeah, no. And there's this weird phenomenon that does happen where there are racist Uyghurs. And it's so weird. Have you seen that?
That's like the kind of thing the Jewish archetype they want to present of like, you know, white racists. Yeah, white supremacist Klansmen.
Are these white Uyghurs? They do exist. Don't get me wrong. I've seen them.
I haven't actually.
Mostly on the internet. I've seen like Facebook profiles and it's like they listen to rap music while also like hating the N words.
Yeah, well, I can't imagine anybody who'd be like that.
Hey, at least we're ironic. I know. But it's like, I don't know, it's weird. I've seen it. It does exist, unfortunately.
Like, I'm not saying people who listen to rap are Uyghurs. Like, that's not the point at which you become a Uyghur. You become a Uyghur when you're just like, you don't give a fuck about, like, trying to do anything right. Like, you're just there and you're going to be a little, you know, punk ass, but it's not white punk. It's just niggerdom.
Yeah, like, I think ultimately rock and roll is a mistake, right? Even though I do listen to it sometimes. But what I'm saying is that rock and roll was at least, like, That's much more white than rap music.
Yeah, and it's a like mistake.
For it's you know, ultimately, like, maybe there were black roots to it, but it was like a different black.
Yeah, well, the black roots are from the blues, and that was like a totally different time.
Like, I like blues music
to today. Come on,
I love some traditional black music. You know, when it's just black, you know, it's their organic culture, and it's not paused by these gangsta imagery. You know,
thanks. You know, produced by the Jews of the record industry.
Yeah, and even if it was black initially, it got very white very quick. It got famous from white people.
We did a lot of good with it.
Yeah, and yeah, I don't like most rock music. I only like weird post-punk, weird like indie stuff. But still, like, it was ultimately a very white music compared at least to. It's not ideal, right? Like, it would be good if we could live in a society where that never happened.
Right, it's just Vivaldi 24/7.
Yeah, but that's not the reality of things.
No,
unfortunately, I like to LARP sometimes. I think about that, but.
Every channel on the radio is Vivaldi.
It's Vivaldi.
One day. you got two channels on the radio. You got the Wagner channel and you got the Vivaldi channel.
Yeah. No, we got to have Bach, dude. That's my favorite. I love Bach so much.
No, I love Bach as well, but
that's like, I think he's my favorite.
The meme guys are Wagner and Vivaldi.
They're meme, but they just can't. I just love that stuff. It's that,
the classical axis, if you will.
You know, just especially when it's played on a harpsichord. Bach sounds beautiful.
Harpsichords are really, honestly, like, how do we go from harpsichord to piano? You'd think it'd go the other way around.
Harpsichord has no velocity. It's not sensitive to velocity. It only has one velocity, so you can't play with volume.
What does that mean?
Well, like, you know, soft to loud, you can't really do that.
Oh,
there's just one sound, because it's like a pluck. It's a preset pluck, and it's the same volume every time.
And with a piano, you can like play hit the key hard, and the hammer is just gonna drop.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be loud.
It's gonna drop. The beat gonna drop.
when the piano beat drop.
Yeah, when that key drop. So that's why we evolved to the piano, because that's an advantage of the piano. But since Bach wasn't written for the piano, it's written for the harpsichord, it sounds a lot better, because a lot of times when people add their own like expressions and dynamics to it that didn't exist in the music before.
Maybe it's just because you don't hear it as often as pianos nowadays, but I just think harpsichords are amazing.
Yeah, they are, like, beautiful.
That sound is, it's so pristine.
Yeah, it is.
That it's like, it feels, and it might just be due to its lower quantity out there, like I said, but it just feels more, a more like sophisticated sound than the piano.
Yeah, it does. It
sounds like it's more refined, almost. I mean, you do make an excellent point that, you know, engineering-wise, the piano is more dynamic in its capacity as an instrument.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't mean it, you know, I always want to hear a piano forever and never hear
I love the harpsichord. I also love harp. The harp.
The harp program.
Don't know what that is.
Isn't that the weather alteration thing?
Oh, yeah.
I love harp. I just love the fact that they're gonna just, you know, cause earthquakes whenever they want. Yeah, no, the harp is a beautiful instrument, and
harpsichord, harp. They're all beautiful. I like the organ as well, especially when you're in a real church with a real organ that's like thousands of years old in Europe.
Thousands of years old harp organ.
Or maybe not thousands.
Hundreds,
sorry.
Long, my friend. Hey. You know, it'd be cool if they did, but
no, I didn't. Yeah, I know it. I know what you mean.
We did have harps for thousands of years.
Yeah, no, I meant hundreds.
I know. I'm sorry.
Just, I made a mistake.
I had to jump on you there just because it would be funny to think. I know. You know. They had organs, but they did not have
Did Plato play the organ? That'd be funny.
they had pipe organs, but you know, they didn't have guitars. They didn't have the clarinet.
Well, have you listened to like a real? You probably have, like, a real organ being played.
Yeah, I've heard that.
You know, old church. It's just, instead of like a fake electric one or something. It's so beautiful. You just feel it. You just feel everything.
So,
and I could just imagine like going to mass or whatever or something, or where they play that, or like, you know, like how, because Bach, he did like some. liturgy for like the Lutheran church, you know. Just imagine that, like going every day, every Sunday you hear a new Bach piece or something and it's being played on an organ. Like,
that'd be cool.
I think back in the day they had more of a connection with the divine culturally. We've taken the divine out of everything in our culture.
Right.
Because there's that feeling of purity and pure like awesomeness in its, you know, original sense.
Yes.
When you listen to this music, you know, not like awesome, you know, like,
but like fun, sublime.
Yeah, like not the Funko Pop awesome. Yeah.
Yes. Very different.
Yeah, sublime. There you go.
It exists through process of sublimation, and that's the experience you have with it is sublime.
So I do recommend anyone, I haven't done this that often, but whenever I do hear classical music or whatever live, it is life-changing. It's very good. I recommend you guys to do it. It's good to get involved in this kind of culture, to know your roots, I guess.
Right. You know, for the French out there, with experiencing this absolute catastrophe with Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah. That happened over the break that we, two-week break.
What was your initial reaction?
Not good.
Yes. Well,
I was just like, same. Oh, crap. But I hate to admit it, but I wasn't too shocked, or I'm like, our society is just so crazy that things like this are happening, and it doesn't shock me.
Yeah.
Even if it was an accident, I don't know. No one believes it's an accident that I know. I haven't really researched it, but they say everyone I know is like, oh, it's definitely Muslims. Like normies, like even like liberal normies sometimes, like not liberal, but you know.
Normies.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, I don't think it was an electrical fire.
Yeah.
I don't even know though, like myself, like maybe it was. And I'm like a Nazi.
We really have no way to know. Yeah. And I'm like there's a lot of reason to believe that it could have been terrorism because you know, it's France.
Yeah.
And the absolute state of France in 2019 means that terrorism can never be ruled out. But it also could just be like
Ahmed,
a mistake.
Like he's on the construction site and you forgot to unplug something. And
now this.
Yeah. That's my favorite web series or web channel. Now this.
That's funny because it's like my least favorite. Oh. Oy vey, now this.
Oh, now this and now that.
Now this. What do we do?
That's where they got the name from, huh?
That's what I can only read it in that voice.
It's like oh, now this.
Now this. Oh, jeez.
Five feds got together in the woods.
And burned a cross.
And burned the cross. Now this.
Yeah.
The threat of white supremacy in America.
It's like they got the name as like a excerpt from a sentence that started off like things were bad, but now this.
Yeah. Or you could do it in the bass way, like now this is bass.
Now this is epic.
Yeah, now this is epic.
It was just Ben Shapiro the whole time. Okay, now this is epic.
Okay. What did the whole Ben Shapiro thing happen? Like, I think it's been a while since we uploaded an episode because, you know, life gets in the way. I think you guys understand by
Ben
now.
Ben Shapiro did have started making jokes about the fire.
I didn't know that, but I just know that I think when we were absent, I know the other shows talked about it, of course, but how Ben Shapiro was like the media was trying to portray him as the alt-right on, was it Forbes.com or something? And they, that was a lot.
I don't know. Alt-right leader Ben Shapiro, you mean?
Yeah. Now this is epic.
Now this. But I was talking with some of my friends about the the cathedral fire, and it had affected a lot of them very deeply, is, you know, no surprise to anybody. But I'd like to read some of the conversation I had with somebody, and what he had said was along the lines of people are just going to forget and move on, that nearly 1,000 years of European excellence towering over one of our greatest cities and that achievement destroyed in a day. And my response to him was that I only see one way to keep the memory of this event alive, and that's turning towards a more honorable path in our lives. And no matter who else remembers what happens, a devotion to this lifestyle will be our own way of paying the respects owed to what we've lost. And, you know, we need to internalize the meaning of the cathedral. It's a monument of devotion. It's a beautiful offering of the best talents from brilliant men to glorify the divine in their life. And when you think about it, like a cathedral is the manifestation of like transcendent sacrifices from masterfully skilled men.
Masons.
The most visionary artists and like the most ingenious engineers and the most pious clerics all coming together to build this wonder.
Mullahs.
And yet none of it would be done without a whole army of common folk behind it. You know, the construction laborers, the craftsmen and artisans who make the pieces, like the woodwork and the stonework, and the peasant lady who pray in the cathedral. Like all this.
Hey, yo, I didn't know this woodwork.
Okay, go on.
All this talent and energy is spent in the pursuit of honoring the divine. The cathedral is an expression of our need to fulfill our potential and make our God proud of his creation. And, you know, just in the same way a young boy is driven to excellence by his innate desire to please his father and make his parents proud of him. You know, if you ever like seen like a little child, like say, oh, look at me, mommy and daddy. Look how fast I can run. And, you know, look how good I did on my test at school. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not ego in the adult sense. That's wanting to please parents. You know, a child can understand that thing. So yeah, those were my feelings about, you know, the cathedral and its meaning.
Your friend was like, why you just send me that wall text? I'm just kidding.
No, he appreciated the sentiment.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes people on our side of things, you know, will be caught up in the beautiful building and
burning.
Yes, and you know, while they're not wrong to mourn that and to, you know, feel destroyed with the building's destruction, there's like, it's not just a beautiful building. It has symbolic meaning as well. It's inherent to the construction and purpose, the function of the building, and the motivation behind its construction.
Mm-hmm.
That matters a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
And the same way that, you know, people will say how like Soviet architecture is will ruin your spirit. This is supposed to
enliven your spirit.
Yes, yes.
Exactly. Edify you.
And that's meaningful. Architecture can like imbue its beauty in your soul from you experiencing it in your life. And, you know, in 2019 America, we don't get a lot of that. Well, much at all. You know, you can go visit DC and, you know, while everything's going to be Masonic neoclassicalism, they still had appreciation for...
Well,
a more genuinely
there's defined. No transcendent element anymore in architecture. It is pure utility. It is pure. It's what utility, value does it have for the next 50 years at most?
And a postmodern aesthetic.
Yeah.
That is novel at best.
We're like, they're going around. They've been doing this for the past few years. Like, they're updating like McDonald's and stuff. And,
yeah, I've noticed that.
And they're turning them to like gray boxes.
Yes.
It's like, to make it even more depressing, we're going to turn your McDonald's into a gray box.
Wow. Damn, son. I hadn't even thought of that. But it's like the only architectural updates and like, you know, changes we get to see is like gray McDonald's box. Redesigning.
Wow! You know what? Let's make this a little sweet. We're going to do a little more crap posting or shit posting, as you guys also call it. What should I make for dinner, Nike?
What should you make for dinner?
I have lentils.
Lentils and
should I make lentil soup?
I mean, I've had my fill of lentil soup over the past weeks.
Oh, that's true, because that's like one of the few things you could eat.
That's the one thing like I eat the most. Like, no joke, I eat that more than anything else.
What do you guys usually put in it? Like, what's the Greek lentil soup? Just carrot, celery.
Carrot, celery, a little bit of potatoes.
Potatoes, man.
Yeah, that's about it. Well, no, other beans as well. You know, other Greek beans.
Grease ball beans.
I think you should make bratwurst.
What?
Bratwurst.
Out of lentils?
No, in addition to your lentils.
I don't have bratwurst.
Go buy some.
I don't like sausage.
Really?
Yeah.
Dude, brats, oh my god, they're delicious.
They're nasty.
Why don't you like them?
I've never liked sausage.
Are you not a griller?
No. I like grill, and I like grilled salmon or stuff like that, or grilled stuff.
Huh. But just not sausage.
No.
When's the last time you had it?
like 5 years. I'm also a pescatarian, so I don't eat it that. So I only eat fish. Fish.
I don't know if you've told me that explicitly.
I think I have. I don't like to bring it up because it's like, oh, look at me. I'm a pescatarian. Like the vegan thing, you know, I don't want to. Yeah. It's just
you
a personal thing.
Have a pescatarian
thing.
Option?
I mean, it's actually pretty easy, you know, because I could.
Dude, fish are great.
Yeah, I eat fish all the time. I love it.
There's like, you know, people who are just pescatarian by coincidence of geography.
Yeah, it's also out of preference, too.
I don't like that chicken.
I don't like the modern meat industry. It's just so gross and fake. I have nothing against eating meat, right, on principle. But it's just the way it is now, these like mass produced slaughterhouses. It's just something I just feel like I can't participate in.
I get that, but I'm also, you know, a certified fat nigga.
Yeah.
Even if that's not expressed in my BMI and physique, spiritually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, spiritually you're a fat nigga.
You're right. So I love well prepared meats.
Yeah, I mean,
and
it was
my love of good food. You know, maybe that's a shortcoming on my part, but yeah, my love of good food outweighs my disdain for mass farming. You know, I don't even have. I'm not like going to defend Monsanto or like mass scale animal.
It's just gross because like these animals are like sitting in their own filth in like barn, like not even barns, like these like warehouses, and it's just so unnatural.
It is unnatural. Doesn't mean that the meat's still edible.
That's true, but there's a lot of bad fish farming too out there. It gets really gross. But also, I guess on principle, I have nothing really against like if someone caught their own meat or killed their own meat. But now I've actually lost the taste for meat, like steaks and stuff like that. It took me a long time, but now it actually sounds gross to me because I still remember how it tastes. I've just lost the appetite for like a steak like I used to. I've actually had a few pieces of like ham on accident. I had a breakfast burrito where they put like ham and bacon, and I had some. I'm like, oh, this is nasty.
Oh, this isn't kosher.
Yeah, it wasn't kosher. That's the most important part. But then there's like big chunks of ham. I'm like, what? Ugh. I'm like, oh, it's ham. That's why it's gross. Yeah, I love myself some fish. I love shrimp. Ooh.
Shrimp is great.
Octopus, a new thing that I tried recently.
Also amazing.
I had it at a Greek restaurant.
Oh,
it was
a nice ktapoidi.
It was made perfectly. It was so good. It's the best thing I've probably had in a long time.
Dude, octopus is, it shouldn't be this good. Like, you wouldn't expect it.
You wouldn't. I was kind of like worried when the person ordered him. Like, I don't know if I want to try this. It was like an appetizer thing, you know. And like, I don't know, man. But then I ate it and it was really good.
Yeah. Calamari is like, tasty.
I haven't had that.
You've never had, what?
No, I haven't. I know it's weird, but I haven't.
Try it next time.
No, I will.
Maybe you can make it tonight. Maybe that's what you can make.
Yeah, I don't have any calamari. I don't want to leave.
So you're asking me what you should cook for dinner tonight, but you're not willing to go to the grocery store to like buy anything that might be an ingredient to my suggestion.
Yes.
What is the point? I don't know what you have at your house, nigga.
Yeah, I have lentils. I have some quinoa. I like quinoa. It's something... I thought it was like gay stuff, and I actually had it. I'm like, ooh, this is good.
Yeah, you know, don't knock it till you try it when it comes to gay stuff.
No!
Is that what you're saying?
No. It's pretty good.
Yeah, no, I like quinoa. Another thing I can also have during this season, fasting.
There's another thing they have that they include octopus in it. It's a Japanese, like, snack. Forgot what it was called. It's like they're kind of like donuts, like savory, like small circle donuts, and they put a piece of octopus in the middle. They're so good.
I've never had that.
Let me go see what they're called.
I've had like these like Japanese cuttlefish snacks. They're like sort of crunchy and small, like puff balls, but they were tasty.
The balls are either made out of rice or just like a dough. I'm not quite sure. Someone told me rice, but I wasn't quite convinced. It seems too, like, doughy for it. But it was so good. And they'll put bonito flakes on it.
Bonito flakes?
Yeah. You know what that is?
It's
like fish flakes, basically. Like dried fish. Probably a certain type of fish, but...
Interesting.
It's not onigiri. Not at all. Not even close. Japanese puffs? I can't find it. It's good, nonetheless.
I'll be on the lookout if I go to a Japanese restaurant anytime soon.
Yeah, Japanese food is really good. I like it better than Chinese food.
If you moments later.
Smith's is very big in the Mexican American community.
That's cool. I don't know why, but you know,
it's like very big. It's like a
what?
It's like a
very big. Wow.
It's a new very state? Yeah. It's like a staple in Chicano culture in some ways. Morrissey.
No way. Smith's.
I swear.
You're fucking mean, dude.
I'm not. I swear. It sounds so weird because in my mind, like. Morrissey's like the complete opposite, like you could imagine, Morrissey's of like a Latino,
like the white man's musician.
Yeah, because he's like he has that like elegance and kind of he's sensitive, you know, like it's like a very in a very white way.
He's
like
middle brow.
Yeah, it's like,
and he's dryly humorous. He's like the archetypical, you know, post goth, post punk musician.
Yeah, like he reads and
that's
too much poetry.
That's white. And all of those things are
just search on the internet, like Morrissey Latino or something, Mexican American community.
I'm going to like spend the next several hours after we're done talking about looking this up.
It's very big. You'll
this
see.
This is amazing.
I don't know if you'll see cholos, but you'll see like. Oh, very...
damn it. I thought that's what you're talking about, man.
Well, maybe to you there'll be cholos.
We'll see.
Did you see like normie Mexicans sometimes with like the Smiths shirt? It's funny. It's the funniest thing ever, but it's true.
I was happy in the haze of a drunken hour, but heaven knows I'm miserable now.
Hi, hi, hi!
I came to America looking for a job, and then I found a job, and I see deporting me now in my life.
Why do I only eat beans and rice?
To people who don't care if I eat beans and rice.
They have a trumpet for like the little guitar solo.
Oh my God, Mariachi Smiths. That would be.
It's got to exist. I bet you it exists.
God damn it.
Yeah, they'll even have like tattoos of Morrissey.
See what I mean? Well, I guess I haven't said it at all this episode, but there are undeniably instances of like Hispanics really like really trying to integrate into white.
They
ways
like
of
very white things, but they hate white people. It's really weird.
I think there is a sort of dissonance there. I think their initial reaction is to not like white people for, you know, whatever reasons the Jews gave them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what do we really do? It's like, I'm not talking about like talking about MS-13 or like illegals, but like the people who like did the bit and came here legally, like what really have we done to them that they have like legitimate reason to hate us without propaganda telling them that they should? Like, honestly, what legitimate conflict exists?
In honor of L.A. declaring November 10th Morrissey Day, here's why Mexicans love Maz so damn much.
Oh, my God.
Let me see. Well, Morrissey expresses values that Angelenos of all ages value.
Oh, is this like just urbane?
Huh?
Is this like a urbanites?
No, I've seen
what do they mean by Angelenos then?
Well, that's just someone that lives in Los Angeles, but like. Los Angeles is a very weird place. It's not like New York City.
It's not weird. New York.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's a very weird place.
It is.
It's like the weirdest place probably in America, to be honest. Downtown LA is the weirdest and worst place to be. Because no one goes to downtown
schizophrenic.
LA. Schizophrenic. Yeah, it's literally only homeless people.
Like New York City, for everything bad about it, it is coherent in its bad qualities. Whereas LA is just like extremely incoherent.
Mexicans stand tightly together, heavily tattooed, and full of heart, loudly singing along with Maz, whether at a concert or in our bedrooms. It's how we sing mariachi and rancheras with our families and friends. See, there's like these girls, these like cholo-looking girls with a sign that says Mexicans for Morrissey. I'm not lying, this is a big cultural phenomenon in the Latino community.
Wow.
Specifically Mexican.
I am deeply fascinated now.
Yeah.
Well, mostly because...
I like this.
It's like one of those niche, weird things. It's like, how did this happen? And it's also something I really like.
I like this. Can King of Controversy Morrissey keep his most hardcore fan contingent, Latino Americans, on side?
Sounds like there's no risk of them, like, turning their backs on him.
Yeah.
Sounds like they like him too much.
Yeah, I think they're willing to overlook.
This man is from the UK. There are no Mexicans there.
He lives in LA, by the way. He does now.
Oh, he does?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, he's lived in LA for like the past 20-something years.
Huh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I was talking to this Brit Bong about Morrissey recently, and she told me that he's trying to run for parliament.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But maybe if he's living in the U.S., that's... Well, might not be
true. Yeah, well, like some cholo looking guys do. Like some of these guys on the images look kind of cholo, and they have like Morrissey stuff.
God damn,
it's weird. It's really weird.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I don't know how to feel about this, but my honest opinion is I like it.
Yeah, it's funny. But it used hilarious. To get me mad though.
How could I be mad at that? How could I be mad?
Right, well, transitioning from Latinos for Morrissey. Nikkei's gotta say
Morrissey.
He's got this little article on Vice about the Holding Down.
Holding Down in New York.
New York City.
Yes. So this is a funny article I came across. It's actually very old. It's from 2014. But this is the first time I've ever read it or heard anybody speak about it. And I'd like to share this story with you. It's from a little loser over at Vice, who I don't think has written an article since 2015. The author's name is Peter Ruch.
Ruch.
The last article he wrote looks like it was August 27th, 2015.
Whoa.
And his article titled, Why White Supremacists Love Donald Trump.
Oh!
2015.
Different times.
Yes, different times. Now he has to write why white supremacists hate Donald Trump. before he wrote that article, he wrote NYC's Greek fascists, the Golden Dawn, are terrible dinner dates. The subheader reads, the New York City cell of Greece's right-wing organization are a bunch of assholes.
Oh.
And he begins, on the evening of March 23rd, I found myself in the back of the Taverna Greek Grill, a small family restaurant in Howard Beach, Queens, picking out a plate of tzatziki and pita bread. I'd come to the boonies of New York City, outer borough, to meet a band of Hellenic fascists known as the Golden Dawn. Initially, I contacted the group out of a sick fascination, the kind you might have with a pus-inflamed wound. Your eyes fixate on it, even though your stomach tells you to turn away. Besides, as events in Greece have illustrated, if one doesn't keep a careful eye, the infection can spread and sometimes turn deadly. Oof. They scared, son. Politics in Greece have become increasingly polarized. The country's economy collapsed under the weight of a sovereign debt crisis. When the world financial meltdown broke in 2008, since then, Greece has endured a series of unpopular austerity measures imposed by the European Union and the International Monetary Fund that have only exacerbated poverty and social unrest. The drama has played out with general strikes, clouds of tear gas engulfing large demonstrations, and the ascension of political parties that stand on radical ends of the spectrum. Syriza, or the coalition of the radical left, went from winning 3.9% at the polls in Greece's 2004 election to receiving 26.9% of the vote in 2012, becoming the country's leading opposition party. Just a little side note, Syriza is now the ruling party in Greece, and as of 2015, July, they had the whole neoliberal heel turn and just became another global homo social democratic party instead of, you know, a hardcore leftist.
Yeah, like they all do.
Anyway, in the shadow of the country's economic malaise, the right-wing movement of the Golden Dawn rose in opposition to Syriza and pretty much everyone else. Yeah, if anything, it was more of a opposition to New Democracy, the center-right party, and just their total
cuck
neocon corporate bullshit.
That's right, we go.
Corruption. Yeah, the
Golden Dawn is just another left-wing fascist group.
New Democracy used to be the only pro-Zionist party in Greece, but as of late, Syriza has now taken a Zionist
stance
towards Israel. Yeah.
Very radical leftist.
Yeah, very coalition of the so-called radical left. See, the S in Syriza stands for, well, in English, radical. And now it's like the least relevant acronym letter. Yeah. Radical is the last word I would describe them.
Are you Syriza?
Their party symbol is a Greek meander, which looks like an awful lot like a swastika. No idea what they're talking about there. Looks nothing like a swastika, retard. Since its ascension, the group has been tied to an uptick in deaths and beatings of immigrants, gays, and leftists.
Oh.
Wow.
In Minecraft?
Sounds like quite of an interesting uptick.
That sounds like a good Minecraft mod.
Yeah. Can I get the Golden Dawn mod for Minecraft? On September 17th, 2013, about 30 Dawn thugs surrounded anti-fascist rapper Pavlos Fissas, also known as Killa P, Athens cafe, and stabbed him to death. 19 leading members of the party were arrested and charged with running a criminal organization. Still, with widespread reports of the Dawn infiltrating Greek police forces, questions remain over just how thick the blood runs between law enforcement and the fascists. Well, the law enforcement in Greece still tries to shut it down when Golden Dawn demonstrates, so come to your own conclusions about that relationship. The fact that people in Athens call Golden Dawn, you know, members sometimes before they'll call the police because they know Golden Dawn members will respond faster. You know, what does that say about the relationship? Sounds like the police are just puppets, like they always are, of the establishment.
Yeah, that's that whole caved-in head leftist meme that somehow the fascists are working with the cops, which is completely false.
And yes, there are Golden Dawn members who join the police.
But they're like...
That's not all of them. Not enough to, like, be
And
the
they're,
police.
Like, doing it, like, hiddenly, like, in a... Surreptitiously, I guess, is to sound big brain. You know, they're just kind of like doing it. Like, they're probably not like vocal about it. Yeah.
Oh, some of them are. It's just hard to really clamp down when you have like a very inefficient bureaucracy, which is good.
Yeah.
It shows that when you have a destable system that you can start to impose your will, but hasn't fully been realized with the Greek police yet. Maybe one day, but hasn't happened. Especially in no way that these people think it has. Anyway, despite the renowned penchant for violence, polls have shown that more than 11% of Greeks support the party, and their spokesman, Ilias Kassidiaris, has stated that his desire to spread cells wherever there are Greeks. So far, they've established branches in Melbourne, Montreal, and Nuremberg, and New York City.
Nuremberg.
Yeah. We're going to see some crazy shit in Nuremberg. Just kidding. They're very well behaved and never break the law, ever.
Yeah.
Before a meeting with the Golden Dawn's New York cell could be arranged, a guy calling himself Giorgio interrogated me over the phone. After my lengthy cross-examination, Giorgio started to open up. I asked about his accent. I was expecting somebody who sounded Greek, I said. He laughed. I don't have a, hello, I'm from Greece, kind of accent, Giorgio said. But we have guys like that. They just came over. We have some Greeks that have been here since the 70s, and we have Greeks that were born here in Queens, Astoria, and Whitestone. We're pretty much regular people. We do charity stuff, even though we live here. We still have close family ties over there, and it kind of bleeds over. Bleeds being the key word. About 2 years ago, when the Golden Dawn began making appearances in Astoria's Greek community, many people were worried that blood would be spilled. Oh, God!
Oh.
They work out, said Nikolaos Levis, an organizer with Aristeri Kinisi, Left Movement, New York. They look tough. They like to march around. That's literally the only quote that this guy could get.
That sounds
about
good.
What this leftist in New York thinks about them.
They look tough.
You know, I like how he precedes that sentence with saying, like, people were worried there'd be blood spilled. And all this guy says, like, they like to work out and go march, you know.
Yeah.
They like to look tough.
Sounds like Ram.
Yeah, sounds like this guy's so afraid of the imminent threat of their violence, right? Mm-hmm. That's what that quote expresses to me. Yeah. And Golden Dawn first showed itself by coming around to local Greek businesses and asking for donations to help their people in the mother country who were hit with economic woes. They didn't identify themselves at first. A few days later, they showed up offering free Golden Dawn t-shirts to those who pledged monetary support. Business owners were horrified. Citation needed. Even the Golden Dawn's charitable efforts were tinged with xenophobia, which is ironic considering they are immigrants to the U.S. A box asking for donations of clothing and canned food placed without permission at Staffagion Cultural Center in Queens was labeled for Greeks only. Based. I almost had a fist fight with one of their members. Keyword there being almost, said Christos Vournos, who works at the center, explaining how Dawn members loitering by the charity box had resisted his entreaties to leave. They eventually complied and left the building. But that wasn't the last the cultural center saw of them. So, like, literally the worst things this guy can actually say about what happened is that they did exactly what they were asked to do, which was like, hey, you guys got to leave. And they did. I like, oh, this guy said I almost got into a fist fight, which, you know, didn't end up actually happening. And, oh, blood in the streets. So, yeah, they just like to work out. Do you see the disconnect? I think it's very blatant here. This guy is just grasping for straws because the only point of this article is demonization. But I haven't even got to the funny part yet. So we'll keep trudging through it. At a May 2013 screening of Greek American Radicals, a documentary about 20th century union activism among the Greek diaspora, about 200 people turned up, including four Golden Dawn members. The Dawners were upset that the film lacked patriotic spirit. Not a single Greek flag is in the promotional poster, the Dawn's website complained. They didn't do anything until after the film, recalled Nicholas, who was at the screening. But afterward, there was a question and answer period with the producers. The first question was being answered, and then they came out with a megaphone and were like, we have a question.
Chad.
Very Chad move. 100 people fell on them. They were grabbed and thrown out. Again, citation needed. The Dawners pounded on the web that, quote, a group of 15 or so elderly communist zombies tried to silence us. They conflate everything, said Nicholas. Aristeri Kinesi to them is a front for Syriza, which is a front for the Jews, which is a front for the world communist conspiracy of George Soros. Where, my dear friends, is the lie? See, at this point, Syriza never had been in the government after the crisis, but they would soon take that leading party role. And they would show their true colors, just how bought out they are, how fucking fake and gay their anti-global finance position goes. And it doesn't go very far, let me tell you that. Very disappointing. But yeah. Nicholas and other activists I spoke with told me that the group of expats sympathetic with Syriza had planned to have a meeting last October in the basement of an apartment complex in Astoria. The Golden Dawn heard about it and showed up the night before, chucking rocks at the building's windows. Then the next morning, residents found banners bearing Dawn's swastika-like insignia strewn along the building's exterior. Though most in the Astoria community are wary of confrontations with the Dawn, the group's provocations have activated circles of lefty diaspora in New York. On March 22nd, outside the Greek consulate on the Upper East Side, a group crowd of about 50 people turned to mark a global day against fascism. Velina Manolova, with the Balkan Queer Initiative,
said
she joined the rally, even though she is Bulgarian.
Oh, gosh.
Because fascist groups are on the rise across Europe. Bulgars, hold this L. They could gain traction in the U.S. if people didn't.
Surprised he wasn't an Albanian faggot.
Yeah, right? The Balkan Queer Initiative. Oh, man. You can't make this shit up, dude. It's tolerated by governments over there, said Velina. It's represented as this extreme radical fringe thing, when in fact it's rounding up all this nationalist sentiment in precarious economic times. Don't know if that whole thought makes sense. But this thought doesn't make sense. This thought named Velina. The Golden Dawn's presence in New York had been heralded in the seedy corners of the white supremacist internet and greeted with trepidation by most Greek Americans. Yet little is known about their activities in the city, just they claim to be conducting charity operations.
Uh-oh.
The New York group. Yeah, oh God, not charity! The New York group has never spoken to the press, nor have its members ever been publicly photographed in their Dawn paraphernalia. When I headed to Howard Beach, my goal was just to find out who the hell these people are without getting upside down in a vertical spit, shaved into little pieces and stuffed in a gyro. Giorgio, he's talking about like a cooking spit, which they make the meat.
No, I know, but like
he's so afraid. He's going to be turned into gyro meat.
Well, imagine if they're talking about Mexicans and they talked about I would have been afraid to turn into taco meat.
That would have been like, racist. Yeah, I was going to interview MS-13, but I was afraid of being turned into taco meat.
Yeah, that would have been like really bad.
Yeah. Giorgio is 15 minutes late to our meeting at the Taverna Greek Grill.
That's early for Greeks.
I know. I just love how... How it, like, you know, the stereotype is reality, because I don't take shame in that. We don't have to be on time for this faggot.
No, yeah. For work,
you do. We're going to be on our own time. The interview will start when I get there, bitch. Before I decided to call him, he said the guys were wrapping up their weekly meeting and would be joining me shortly. 45 minutes passed. I'd finished dinner, a plate of spanakopita, and there was still no sign of the golden dawn. On my way out the door, I called Giorgio again and asked why he had wasted my time. He started to seethe. "The golden dawn does not give interviews," he shouted. "You are communists. You are the enemy. Did you really think I'd let you talk to us? This is Rocky IV, and you're Ivan Drago." That's probably a compliment for this guy.
Yeah.
Ivan, he doesn't deserve to be compared to, muscle-bound boxer.
Muscle Soviet guy.
Yeah. Giorgio hung up, but on my way home, I got a call from a blocked number. "Is this Peter?" a grandfatherly Greek voice wanted to know. "Who is this?" "This is Bino. Where are you, Peter? Are you at the restaurant?" "No." "Do you want to interview the Golden Dawn?" "Why don't you go to the restaurant?" "I went to the restaurant. Nobody showed up. Nobody came to meet you. This is a mistake. What happened? Why don't you go back to the restaurant? Wait, and we will meet you." Something told me that if I returned to the restaurant, they'd try to snuff me out the same way their brothers in mother country did to Pavlos Fisas. Bino kept trying to entice me to turn around until I hung up. When I got home, I'd noticed I'd missed a call. There was a new message waiting for me. "Peter, tell me what's going on with you guys." It was Bino again. "If you want me to tell you something, I can tell you anything you want. But you, this kind of faggots and communists and like Syriza from Greece. I don't know, man. I don't know what's going on with you guys.
You're like
probably
faggots.
You take it up the ass, you know." "I hope not, because you are a man, you know? All right, Peter, all right. I hope if you can take a dick in your ass, you can take a dick in your mouth too, you know?" Apparently he recorded this message and uploaded it to SoundCloud, and it is embedded in the article.
Oh, wow, really?
Yes.
Should we listen to it?
Sure.
"Hi, Peter. This is Dino. I called you before. Are you guys still there? Because my guys, George, tell me that you're some kind of communist. They want to take information from us. I don't know what the hell is going on. You guys are really communist, and you live in the United States? You should go live in Cuba, you know, if you are communist. Please, Peter, let me know what's going on with you guys, you know. If you want me to tell you something, I can tell you, you know, anything you want. But you this kind of faggots and communists and like Syriza from Greece. I don't know, man. I don't know what's going on with you guys."
I like the bands. I don't know.
In US, you know.
Yeah.
"I hope not, because you are a man, you know. All right? All right, Peter. I hope if you take a dick in the US, you can take a dick in your mouth too, you know."
Bye.
His name's not Bino.
What is it?
I hadn't actually listened to the recording before, but his name is Dino.
Oh.
That's a real name. It's just retard doesn't know what he's saying. Fuck you. Fuck you, Peter. Now I'm mad. He's like listing his name as Bino, and I'm like, I've never heard anybody go by Bino, and it sounds silly.
Well, I like
the guy's name is Dino.
Do you see the hashtags that describe it?
Yes!
The first hashtag is taken in the ass. The second one is dick in your mouth. Voicemail, fascism, hate, Golden Dawn, Greek, Queens, NYC. And then there's some responses, like this guy says at 39 seconds, "Lol, Nazis are so stupid. End fascism now." And someone says, "Inbred Nazi scum, cut your dick off and eat it."
5 years ago.
Yeah. I think you're the one that's cutting your dick off, freak.
Yeah. This guy's commenter's name is Brognor Lightbringer.
That sounds like a pagan name.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, if not pagan, just a some Skyrim LARP shit. Anyway, the article ends, hearing Beano's ridiculous message made me ruminate on the Golden Dawn cell in New York City's main purpose, to help bring legitimacy to what the group is doing abroad. But with the mouth-breathing apes like Beano at the helm of the group's U.S. arm, that goal seems pretty unattainable. Nonetheless, if the group's rise in Greece has proven anything, it's that given that the right series of unfortunate events, Golden Dawn's brand of xenophobia and hate can become pretty appealing to a portion of the population. Let's just hope in the States, where an austerity program is also underway, including an $8.7 billion cut to food stamps this February, their vitriolic and contentious politics stay on the fringes. Well, I hope so too, man, because if you go moderate, you're not worth anything.
Yeah, you're gay.
You become Syriza.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just now the Democrat Party of Greece. You know, they used to have hardcore shit, and they were, like, implicitly Eurosceptic. Mm-hmm. My boy Yanis Varoufakis, who, you know, left the party and the government altogether after the betrayal of the referendum. But it's sad, because they could have done the Grexit, man. They could have pulled it off. They could have said, fuck you, Germany, fuck you, IMF, fuck you, European Union, and your awful bullshit. We'll go our own way, and we'll be just fine. And they cucked out. And now they're like, you know, let's also work with Israel for whatever they want.
That's so gay, dude.
It is pretty gay, but... What do you expect from leftists?
Nothing. They're idiots. They don't care about the working class.
No.
Socialism is impossible without nationalism.
Yeah.
It's like the prerequisite for socialism is nationalism. You
and
need
the thing
it.
Is, like, leftism in Greece has always been
nationalistic, probably
patriotic, and yes, but, nationalistic.
But the leftist movement is so retarded because, like, what are you gonna have? How can you can't organize a working class revolution globally? It's got to be done through the nation first, you know.
Like these what? People like fought a full on civil war back in the day.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a serious divide. People were killed, man. It was like
sorry, I'm hardcore really shit. Well, and, it's the Greek context, but also like even in the Southern context, like you could even like through leftist rhetoric, you could say that like the Southerners are conquered people and they're having their history taken away from them, and you're still going to side for these Yankee imperialists that try to destroy their culture. It's because of, oh my god, nationalism's so bad. And it's like, I don't know. I hate these leftist faggots.
Yeah.
Like, you'll support cultural imperialism as long as it destroys nationalism.
It's so frustrating, man, because like...
You'll destroy Greek culture and like support some like American cultural imperialism as long as it destroys Greek nationalism because it's so bad because it's nationalism.
And you won't even defeat capitalism or whatever. You won't even come close to it. Like, you'll never even try to defeat capitalism. What is capitalism lost since Alexis Tsipras has become the prime minister of Greece? Not once.
Still the same. I could still buy Greek olive oil made from the same capitalists, you know? Hey.
I don't think, like, we shouldn't sell olive oil abroad.
I was joking.
Know?
I was trying to... But it's
it's like, you still are going...
You know what, Nikkei? You gotta realize...
With the program for this whole debt repayment shit, which is acceptance of slavery. Debt is slavery.
Yeah!
And you're selling your country out, man. It's like the worst kind of selling out. It's when you're the prime minister.
Nikkei, but you got to realize that the working class, the true working class nowadays, it's the sex workers and the immigrants that act as scabs and take your jobs when there's like, you know, strikes and they hire them and the illegal immigrants. Those are the true working class. So you got to get up with the times.
It's the biggest shame that I can understand that they're leftists and I can only expect leftism from them, but they don't even like stand up for their own values. And that's the most shameful thing, that they're willing to bend over for the EU. Like supposedly radical leftists, and their ideology gets put to the sideline when Merkel has anything to say about it. Because they're sellouts. And they fucking don't stand for anything except pause. That's the only thing you get. When them in charge, you get the pause and none of the economic reform. You know, people's lives aren't better. Sure, the financial recoveries happen, but for the same reason that Greece was brought down with the rest of the world, they're brought back up with the rest of the world. Do you think if the rest of the world hadn't recovered from their own actions that Greece would be doing better? It wouldn't. They are still enslaved to the direction of the oligarchs from like all the typical places you'd expect.
Hey, a new tweet from Gilbert Gottfried. Birthday message to Hitler. You're dead and the Jews run the world. Ha ha.
Ha ha ha. It's so funny, Peter. Or Gilbert.
I gotta admit, Gilbert's kind of funny sometimes. Well, he's like kind of going against...
Well, happy birthday, Hitler.
Hitler.
You're dead and Jews run the world.
It's not even his real voice.
I don't believe that. I believe that is his real voice, and the other voice is the fake one.
Ooh. Yeah, well, all we could say is, leftists, you can't support the working class when you're anti-nation, when you're anti-God, when you're anti-traditional biology, like gender norms, you know?
You've got to actually, you have to actually separate yourself from bourgeois values before you can oppose the bourgeois.
Yeah, it's like...
If you're going to be as, you know, decadent as, and spiritually apathetic...
Maybe like one time the bourgeois, they were like in the 1800s, were like Christians, but with monogamy or whatever. And we don't live in that time. The bourgeois, like the upper middle class guys, they're the ones that are doing all the polyamory transgender stuff.
By the time we had Marxist revolutionaries like actually killing niggas out here, that whole bourgeois class was gone.
Yeah.
The only place it really existed was in Russia.
Yeah.
You know, where they still had a...
And here's the thing, leftists, gender isn't a construct, it's given by God.
That's right. Man and woman, he created them.
Yeah. And religion, like, you can't have socialism without first establishing a foundation of transcendent ideas.
Eternal transcendent principles.
Because what does it mean when you get, you know, the working class revolution, but you can't worship God, and where you can't be a man, like, you can't express your gender... Where you can't be proud in your culture and your heritage? What is that? What is that? It's nothing.
That's like desperation not to starve and then failing at that, as far as history's case goes.
Yeah.
But like you only do that out of desperation.
Do what out of desperation?
We don't have desperation here. We're not desperate to like, you know, maintain our food. Capitalism is giving us, you know, our daily needs, but nothing beyond that. Yeah, exactly.
Well, like, imagine if socialism could, like, socialism, as you guys imagine it, could give us our daily needs, but we wouldn't have a transcendent element.
We'd be in the same situation,
yeah,
basically.
We'd be in the same exact situation. That's
the only difference is, you know, we'd go to work, not get paid, and still get the food that we pay for today. So, functionally, that's really the only difference, is that you're not, like, exchanging goods. You're not exchanging your cash for goods. Mm-hmm. You're just, you know, exchanging your labor for, like, I don't know, food vouchers.
Yeah.
So functionally different, but the results do not vary. It would still just be spiritually dead. And the thing is, they don't even fight for it. They don't even try.
Yeah, they don't care about working class liberation.
Like, it's the last thing they care about. They're not radicals at all.
Left is dead.
That is true.
It's not left anyway. It's just anti-white hatred. That's all it is. That's all they care about now. Hating whitey and hating straight people and hating God. That's all they care about.
Yeah. Fuck them.
And they infiltrate every church, too. That's a weird thing. It's like, oh, I hate religion, but we're going to infiltrate the church and change their ideology.
Because they understand its importance.
Yeah, it's like...
Wherever they go, they must subvert.
Whoa, Nikkei, I'm getting pretty hungry. I got to go eat. I think it's been a good podcast, you know?
Shout out to the big man on his big 130.
Yeah, dude.
130 years.
Pour one out.
Pour one out from a homeboy.
Pour out some Jägermeister.
Yeah, pour out some Jägermeister and then light it on fire.
See you in Valhalla, my homie.
True that.
My name's Anglo. With me, I have Nikkei.
Happy birthday.
To you. At least you're not a Jew.